I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Our series of conversations with the candidates continues today with two Republicans vying to unseat longtime Democratic incumbents in the November election. First up, Richmond Davis, a former Howard County Republican Party chairman, making his first run for elective office, challenging 11-term Representative Elijah Cummings in Maryland's 7th Congressional District. Plus, Silver Spring entrepreneur Liz Matori. The former Democrat ran as a Republican 2 years ago in an unsuccessful primary bid in the 8th District. Now, she's the Republican nominee in the 2nd Congressional District, running against Representative Dutch Ruppersberger, who has held the seat since 2003. We'll take your questions and comments for the candidates when Midday gets underway right after these headlines. Good afternoon and welcome. It is, in fact, Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Hope you had a good weekend. Thanks for joining us. Today, it's Midday on Politics. Election Day is November 6th. That is 14 weeks from tomorrow. So today, we continue our series of conversations with the candidates. My first guest is Richmond Davis. He's the Republican nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in Maryland's 7th District. He's running against the incumbent Congressman Elijah Cummings, a Democrat who has served in Congress since 1996. The 7th Congressional District includes about half of Baltimore City, parts of Baltimore County, and most of Howard County. Richmond Davis is a lawyer in private practice in Columbia. He was admitted to the bar in both Maryland and the District of Columbia. He's a member of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. He has an undergraduate degree in government and politics from the University of Maryland and a JD from the Georgetown University Law Center. This is his first time running for public office. Mr. Davis is 72 years old. He and his wife, Christine, have lived in Dayton, Maryland, in Howard County for the past 17 years. They have three grown children and two grandchildren. If you'd like to join our conversation with Richmond Davis, our number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, to drop us a tweet at @MiddayWIPR. You can also catch us on the WIPR Facebook page where we are streaming live, thanks to our producer, Jamila Krempel. Mr. Davis, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hall. It's my pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the very generous introduction. Let me make one little clarification. Before we went on the air, the introduction to the show mentioned that I was the chairman of the Republican Party in Howard County. Actually, it was Prince George's County some time ago. The current chairman is a fine person by the name of Loretta Shields, who's doing a wonderful job for the Republican Party in Howard County.
Okay, well, so, I apologize for that mistake. That is on me, and thank you for clarifying it. You were, as you say, you know, involved in Republican politics, but this is your first try at elective office. Why? What about elective office appeals to you?
I've been in the private sector as an attorney, as you mentioned, for many, many years, more than 35 years, and I've always been interested in politics, sometimes more active than others on the Republican / conservative side. And because, as you pointed out, I am 72 years of age, and now time is advancing, and I still have my wits about me, I do believe, and I want the opportunity to have more of an impact on what people think about politics, in particular the Republican Party. I consider myself an evangelist for the Republican Party. As a trial lawyer, I've had many, many hours of speaking experience, and I think I can communicate the Republican Party message very effectively, and that's very much what I'd like to do. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to do exactly that.
Sure. Is the Republican Party message, in your view, clear-cut? Because there are lots of folks who say that there's a Trump sector of the Republican Party, and there's a so-called establishment sector of the Republican Party.
Well, rather than view it as Trump versus the establishment, I prefer to view myself as a traditional Republican. And what I mean by that is that's the sort of attitude and philosophy that Republican parties had since 1856 when it was established. And that is, we are in favor of limited government, we are in favor of lower taxes, and a very strong preference for individual rights as well. In later days, or later years, I should say, we're very strong on national defense. We appreciate the fact that We cannot protect and preserve our fine country without an awareness of the need for a strong national defense. There are many others out there who would do us ill.
Mr. Trump, however, has parted ways with many of those conservative principles. When it comes to limited government, he's just in the last week suggested $12 billion in subsidies for farmers to make up for the tariffs that he has imposed, another bit of government intervention. When it comes to national defense, he was on record as being very opposed to the Iraq War, to the Afghanistan War. He'd like to get out of both of those places. He hasn't done it yet, but he's talked about a limited military role in both of those theaters. There are, any number of things that people can point to, free trade, that kind of thing, that have long been, parts of the Republican platform that Mr. Trump seems to be veering away from.
That's a very fair comment. But as I mentioned earlier, I consider myself a traditional Republican with the values that I enunciated. And one of those that I didn't make clear, but is free enterprise. And that certainly has to do with limited government. To the greater extent that we have free enterprise, we have less government involvement in the economy, which I think history has proven is very much the better course of action. As a Republican candidate, I support the President of the United States, who is a Republican by declaration, but that doesn't mean I agree with everything he says. There are times, as you pointed out, when certainly he's taken positions that are contrary to traditional Republican principles that I believe firmly in and that have served this country very well. So to the extent that Mr. Trump is heralding protectionist policies, I disagree. To the extent he takes a softer attitude in the foreign arena toward Russia, I disagree. And that's the message which is consistent. Donald Trump has done some fine things for this country. Some things that, in terms of rhetoric, that aren't so good, that I certainly don't approve of. But I do believe that traditional Republican values have served this country well and will continue to do so after Donald Trump has left office.
A lot of voters see these midterm elections as a referendum on Mr. Trump and his leadership. I mean, certainly Mr. Trump himself seems to want to be framing midterm elections in those terms. And so they are wondering whether or not Congress should remain in Republican control or whether it should flip to Democratic control, whether that would be a good thing or a bad thing. If it's a democratically controlled Congress, is that a good counterweight, counterbalance to Mr. Trump and his policies? And is that good for government? Or should it remain in Republican control to further advance many, if not all, of the president's initiatives? So when folks look at you, are you a representative in the U.S. Congress that's going to be supportive of Mr. Trump in general, or would act more as a counterweight?
Well, Mr., I'll consider this. I'm running as a Republican candidate. I hope that I do prevail. So certainly that would add to the Republican majority in the House if I'm successful. But I would hope that I would remain independent in my perspective and agree with Mr. Trump when I agree with him and disagree publicly when I do not agree with him. But I think from a practical matter, we have to consider the practical politics versus the political philosophy. I've touched upon the latter more than the former, but I'm certainly well aware of the fact that Republican policy cannot be implemented unless we have conservative Republican leadership in not only in the White House, but also in Congress. So I think the best interests of this country are served by reelecting Republicans. Now, I cannot change the fact that Donald Trump, by his manner, and I think it's more of manner than substance, has offended a lot of people. I will readily admit he's offended me on more than several occasions. And I'm viewing him with from a perspective of trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. But having said that, I do think it's important and in the best interest of this country that we reelect a Republican Congress to continue to implement the policies that have been that have begun so successfully with our current Congress.
So let's try to identify some of those policies. Tax cuts, for example, you supported that effort on part of
absolutely. In contrast to the incumbent Elijah Cummings, and I think the proof is in the pudding, one might say, taking a look at how wonderfully the economy is currently performing. It's hard to say that, well, the tax cut was unnecessary, superfluous. To the contrary, common sense tells you that the tax cut put more money in people's pockets. It encouraged business, that we have a more friendly government toward business activities, which resulted in reduction of regulations. So I think tax cut is definitely a positive.
Are you concerned about the debt?
Yes,
deficit?
Very much so. Very much so.
Isn't there a dichotomy there?
Here's the problem.
Tax cuts are a good idea, but I'm very, very concerned about that.
People
hear that and they wonder, what does that mean?
Let me go back to history, and it's still somewhat debatable in economic circles, but Arthur Laffer, during the Reagan administration, recommended policies of tax cuts, believing that encouraging innovation, encouraging people to spend the money they receive from tax cuts for business investments and other purposes would bolster the economy. It remains to be seen whether or not these tax cuts are a net in terms of reducing our debt or they're a negative in terms of adding to the debt. Because as an aside, certainly one cannot dispute that high debt is not historically good for a country. We've run very, very large debt loads for many, many years. And it's worth noting that our debt level in terms of percentage of our national economy is equal to what it was like during World War II, when, of course, we obviously had to spend tons of money and go into debt to save our country. So that is a cause for concern. I certainly do not want us to follow the course of Greece and other countries that have been irresponsible. Are our policies irresponsible in terms of expenditures? Absolutely. But I will say this. I think one has to do an awful lot of pointing at the other side, the Democratic Party. And let's talk about Elijah Cummings here. Elijah Cummings is the old-fashioned term, spend liberal. Although I have to say, given some of the policies endorsed, I don't think liberal identifies as leftward orientation adequately. So talking about spending money we don't have, I think we have to look at the Democratic Party and certainly Elijah Cummings.
And Mr. Cummings would say, for example, he voted against the tax cuts partially because he thought they were distributed very unfairly. What about the issue of fairness? People on the left look at the tax cut and say this was putting a lot of money in pockets of major corporations and very wealthy people.
Corporations generate jobs. To the extent we encourage businesses to spend money because they have more money to spend for investments and employment, everyone benefits. The rising sea lifts all ships, as the expression goes. But I want to touch, again, swing back to the question of expenditures. It's fair to say the tax cut may or may not contribute to the national debt. But when you see the sorts of proposals that are out there now, championed by Elijah Cummings, for instance, such as the so-called Medicare for All, which is a misnomer. That would vastly increase our debt for a system that is already teetering. And if we have time, I'd like to discuss Medicare and Social Security in detail.
Let me ask you to hold that thought, because we will have time when we come back from a quick break. Richmond Davis is the Republican nominee for Congress in Maryland's 7th District. He's running against the incumbent Democratic Representative Elijah Cummings. In November, he is a lawyer in private practice in Howard County. By the way, a reminder for our listeners on the Eastern Shore, we're going to be broadcasting midday from Chestertown tomorrow, from historic Sumner Hall. Online reservations to be part of the live audience for that event have evidently sold out, but they are still taking names on a waiting list. So if you are holding a reservation for tomorrow and your plans have changed, please go online and release your ticket so somebody on the waiting list can be given a ticket. We are delighted that there's been such a great response, and we are very much looking forward to joining our friends in Chestertown tomorrow. We are also looking forward to rejoining our conversation with Richmond Davis when we come back from a quick break. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. Another reminder, tomorrow we will be broadcasting Midday live from the Eastern Shore. We will be at historic Sumner Hall in Chestertown talking about challenges and changes in Kent County as regards healthcare and education. We'll also discuss the rich history of African Americans on Maryland's Eastern Shore. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. Coming up a little later today, a conversation with Republican congressional candidate Liz Matory. The former Democrat switched parties in 2014. She's challenging the incumbent Representative Dutch Ruppersberger in Maryland's 2nd congressional district. But first, more with Richmond Davis. He's my first guest today in this latest installment of our Conversations with the Candidates series. Mr. Davis is a Republican running for Congress in the 7th district against Representative Elijah Cummings. Our number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. If you want to follow me on Twitter, @TomHallWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. We talked a little bit about healthcare before we took a break. What should the healthcare system look like? You support the repeal, the full repeal of the ACA?
Of Obamacare, as it's also more popularly known, yes, I do. I think the problem is that when we get government involved in activities, we're asking for trouble. We're inviting the inefficiency that seems part and parcel of government involved with any public matter. The sorts of things, and I'm not going to pose here as an expert on healthcare. About the law, certain things, yes, but not about healthcare. But I would say this. Certainly the sorts of things that would encourage free enterprise and hence deliver a better product would be such things as health savings accounts, which are in practice now and need to be expanded. That gives the individual consumer.
How would you expand them?
Well, I would make
just
it
raise the limit.
First of all, you can raise the limit. My understanding is that there's certain restrictions on who's eligible and who's not, depending on your employment status. I would make it available for everyone.
So you get a tax, you get favorable tax treatment, but you're still buying it on the open market, right?
Correct.
Didn't we have an open market before Obamacare, and didn't that open market result in some 40 million people being uninsured?
Interestingly enough, well, there are two parts to that question. In terms of the open market, That's very debatable, and I think I would say the debate is really answered in the term negative, because of the simple fact we had restrictions on insurance companies where they could operate, and one of the key competitors in the healthcare market, of course, insurance companies competing for customers and negotiating better rates. When you talk about basically healthcare itself, I think we should have a greater infusion of free enterprise. I think that's what we need first and foremost. In terms of the details,
didn't the healthcare industry benefit from having an expanded pool of people? Once it was mandated that everybody had to have insurance, which is a way of making sure that everybody was insured, which is a way of saving money in the healthcare system so that people weren't going to the emergency room as their primary care doctor, the health insurance companies have this now expanded pool in which they can operate. And isn't that good for them?
Well, I'm not going to give them a brief for the insurance companies. I'm simply saying that competition is the key to better delivery of services. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there were many people uninsured, as we know from the mandated insurance coverage, there are many people who don't want insurance because they, quote unquote, can't afford it. They feel like many of us do when we're very young. We live forever and we'll deal with it.
But then should the rest of us subsidize their care?
But see, that's the problem. So what are we going to do? And that was the problem with mandatory care. We're going to force them. And here we get in a problem with what's important. Freedom of the individual, freedom of the consumer. That's our object. If we want to mandate how people should live their lives and what they should do from Washington, well, vote for the Democrats. That's certainly the orientation they're going toward.
How about immigration? Mr. Trump's zero tolerance policy, very controversial. He decided to end that after a few weeks of pretty bad situations down there in the border.
Mr. Hall, I don't think it's zero tolerance that was the problem. The difficulty came because people not realizing there was a zero tolerance policy did not realize that when they entered the country illegally, not through sanctioned entry points, but went through across the border, Rio Grande, wherever it may have been, with the aid of illegal assistance. They then found themselves in a situation, well, wait a minute here, I'm being arrested and you're taking my children away from me. I understand from a human perspective that's a horrible situation. And what the Trump administration should have done, in fairness, to avoid this, at least to a large measure, was to announce the policy, we are going to implement this policy in a date certain, maybe 30 days from now. So if you come out, if you come to this country and you're bringing your children, that is on you, because we're going to arrest the adult. What are we supposed to do with the children? We're not going to lock them up also.
How about the reasons that they're crossing the Rio Grande and taking their lives, putting their lives at great risk? The reasons they're leaving. How does that figure into your calculation?
Here you go. And let me answer it this way. If you have a legitimate reason to seek asylum, you go through an entry point. You don't cross illegally and then say, uh-oh, you got me.
But so the administration has also separated families who entered legally and requested refugee status and asylum.
Well, I will tell you this. That's not my understanding. So I'm not going to dispute the fact with you, because that my understanding was the separation of families only occurred with those who were arrested for crossing the border illegally.
I think there are a number of documented instances in which
you
that's
may be
not
right,
the case.
As I said.
But what should immigration policy look like? What everybody says we need to overhaul the immigration system. In your view, how should it be overhauled?
I think that we have to have a policy where we respect the borders. I think that policy of legal immigration should be, if anything, perhaps enhanced, because we need the skilled workers who are out there. You've heard about the policy whereby if you have a family member here, we call it chain migration, one term for it, where if you have a family member here, you can bring in your family member. Well, that may or may not be in the best interest of the country, of our nation. It seems to me to be more sensible because there may very well be a need for expanded pool of immigrants here who bring skills that we desperately need in this high-tech world of ours. So I'd like to see an expansion, perhaps, of the ability of people with skills to come into this country
like
legally
the
as immigrants.
Visa program?
Pardon?
The H-1B visa program?
Expand the H-1 visa program, mm-hmm. for instance, which is what that is, yes.
And what about Mr. Trump's assertion over the weekend that he'd be willing to shut the government down over funding for the border wall?
That's gamesmanship. That's a political matter for the Trump administration. I don't think that the wall itself is the absolute necessity for getting a handle on immigration. I think that the most important thing we can do is let people who want to come here, there are legal ways to enter it. If you propose to enter this country illegally, then you pay the consequences.
We have an email from Michelle who says, the state of the economy is a direct result of the measures and policies implemented by President Obama. Trump is reaping the benefits of these policies. The tax cuts, tariffs, trade, and other policies that Trump has put in place will eventually have a negative impact on the economy. We just have a minute left, sir. We don't have time to talk about gerrymandering and the way all of the districts, including the one you're running in, are configured here in the state. But this is one of those seats when the people and the pundits in D.C. Look at the Congress and whether it has a potential to flip to the Democrats. This is one Mr. Cummings' seat is considered a safe seat. All right. So if you're a Democrat, because the district is largely Democrat. If you're a Democrat, why should they want to vote for you instead of Mr. Cummings moving forward as we approach the 2020 election?
I'll agree I'm a long shot, but I think it's important for people to vote for an individual who shares their values. If enough people vote for a Republican and a conservative as well, I think that may have an impact on what Elijah Cummings does in terms of future action, because right now he portrays himself and and fills the bill as a left winger. He himself calls himself, quote unquote, one of the most progressive leaders in U.S. Congress, which is a liberal euphemism for I'm a left winger.
Richmond Davis is the Republican nominee for Congress in the 7th District, running against Representative Elijah Cummings. Mr. Davis, it's been a pleasure to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I've enjoyed it. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, Liz Matory will join me. She's a Republican who's challenging incumbent Representative Dutch Ruppersberger in Maryland's 2nd Congressional District. Before we take that break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who have lost their lives to violence in the city of Baltimore during the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far in 2018, 163 people in Baltimore City have been victims of homicide. Last week, 7 people were reported to have lost their lives to violence in our city. The identity of one 43-year-old male victim has not yet been released. City medical examiners ruled 2 recent deaths to have been homicides and added the names of the deceased to the city's list of cases. Anthony Smith was 45 years old. He was a victim of a shooting in May 1998. He died as a result of complications from his injuries last November. It's now been listed as a homicide. And Christopher Burdett, 48 years old, was injured in a violent attack in August of 2010. He died this past February from complications due to that injury. The names of the other 4 homicide victims this past week are Rick Hall, age 35, Jamal Ross, age 28, Markel Wall, age 23, and Rashard Queen. He was 20 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.